The Lord be with you. You're listening to a podcast from the teaching ministry of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. For more multimedia content or to get more information, go to www.epiclesis.org. Now, here's Pastor Chris.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to another Sunday morning teaching from Epiclesis, an ancient future faith church in Sacramento, California. On this particular Sunday, we were blessed to have Dr. Diane Collard speak to our congregation. Diane is one of the missionaries we enthusiastically support at Epiclesis, and you can find out more about her and her missionary work on our website, that's epiclesis.org. Her message to us on this day, well, it was about contentment. And along the way, she helped us consider just what is meant by contentment and how God tells us we can achieve it. Now, here's Dr. Diane Collard with a message titled, To Be or Not to Be Content. The Lord be with you.
Have you ever had an experience after being away from home for a long time of coming home, that all that means? We have never lived here. But when we get to come to Epiclesis on a Sunday morning, we come home. With the people, with the liturgy, with the purpose, with the support, we come home. And that is such a beautiful word, that we come home. I know you appreciate Ellen and the production of the liturgy, but she has already, in the liturgy, preached my message. I'm going to take it with me, and if I'm ever led to preach this again, I'm going to use it, because you will understand that when you're talking about contentment, she's already laid the groundwork. Thank you. She is the Hall of Fame of liturgy writing. Thank you so much. I'm Diane Collard. I have the privilege of being one of your supported missionaries. Never do I take that for granted. Always, I'm appreciative of it. Glenn and I have been in missions since 1986. We lived in Europe for many years, and now I have the privilege of, and I've told my story. In fact, I almost did that again, of telling you how I became a non-artist working in creative arts. It was a call of God on my life, and he has not released me. And I'm serving him as the Europe director for a mission agency for creatives, artists and creatives of all sorts, called Artists in Christian Testimony International. I have the privilege of working with approximately 60 people who are serving God through their creative gifts on the mission field, from Scotland to Kazakhstan and Tbilisi, Georgia. We have missionaries that are under my umbrella of care. And it's such a joy, such a privilege. And one of those includes Christian Kazaku, whom you have met. And I introduced him to Chris, and he loves you all so much, and I'm supposed to greet you. I learned a lesson a number of years ago from a pastor and a friend that every one of God's commands, no matter what it is for my own good. And it's either to keep me from harm or to give me something good. Every one of them. And I don't always like that, because it feels like sometimes it's a test, or it's in the Bible but it's impossible to do, or whatever I make up, I don't know. But it's all for our good. And today we're going to look at a simple command, and that is to be content. Now, to be content is one of those things that I think I've got it down, and then I find I've lost it. To be content. It's hard to hold on to sometimes. It can be simple things. Like a few years ago, we were redoing our kitchen and we put in new cabinets. Well, then the floor didn't look good. and I wanted a new floor. And then I needed new paint. And then I need, you know, on and on and on. Or I'll buy a dress, and I have to have shoes to go with it. I've got to have a new purse, maybe a new jacket. One thing leads to another that undermines our contentment with what we have. But Paul says in Philippians 4:11, not that I was ever in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. C.S. Lewis says, history is the long, terrible story of man trying to find happiness apart from God. We're not going to do it. We're never going to be content apart from Him. A Finnish proverb is, happiness is a place between too little and too much. But we're not content with that, are we? We want more. They say that on any one day, you have the possibility of being exposed to 4,000 to 10,000 advertisements. Now, you probably only see about, they say, 76 to 99, but every one of them is to make you feel discontented with what you have. Our world does not help us with contentment. John D. Rockefeller famously said, when asked, how much does it take to satisfy a man? A little more than he has. We're not in this world naturally content. Contentment is mentioned 96 times in the Old Testament, and many additional references in the New. But it's not a passive, apathetic concept. I wanted to suggest to you, I'm not going to have time to read every scripture, so if you're interested in following up on this topic, write them down and look them up in the context where you find them in the Word, because this is a deep study that could go for a long time. I just recommend that you do that. The words translated contentment most often means sufficiency. To possess sufficient strength, not passive, not caring, strength to face whatever comes in our life, to be strong, to be enough, to have satisfaction. Here are some verses about God's view of our satisfaction. 1 Timothy 6:8 says, so if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. It has to do with what we have. That's part of it. Hebrews 13:5, we're to be content with whatever God gives us. It says, don't love money, be satisfied with what you have. For God has said, I will never fail you, I will never abandon you. Psalm 104, 27 and 28 talks about being content with the food that God gives us. Psalm 107, 9 talks about God satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Have you ever had a soul thirst so far beyond just being thirsty in our body? Before we found out about you, Glenn and I had a soul thirst for a church that wasn't content with entertainment, wasn't content with just focusing on the world. We had such a need deep for worship that would fill that soul thirst, and God supplied. Jeremiah 31 says God gives us rest, and it's the same word for contentment. And He gives it to the sorrowing. Have you ever sorrowed and felt discontented, couldn't get along with life? God promises that He'll give you rest. There's so many others, but 2 Corinthians 2:10 is one that really hits me. I take pleasure, that means to be satisfied, with my weaknesses. And in insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles, I suffer for Christ. For when I am weak, I am strong. Contentment, not based on happenstance. Contentment based on our relationship to God. It's not apathy, it's strength of living in God's, to His glory. It's not a nonchalant attitude of indifference. We should never have apathy when others are being abused. It's not a lack of ambition. The Jabez prayer, which is one of my husband's favorite in his life, in 1 Chronicles 4:10, Jabez prayed that God would enlarge his border, give him more in ministry, enlarge his border to bless other people. Philippians 3:13 tells us we're to press on to win a prize. That's still contentment. It's not a denial that we do have legitimate needs. God knows that. Philippians 4:6 says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done. 2 Corinthians 9:8, and God will generously. We have an abundant God, people. We live as if we are in a world of scarcity, but we have a God who's abundant. He will generously provide all you need. Then you will find you will always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. Contentment, and this is a very special one for me, is never being content with a lack of beauty. God wants us to desire beauty. He is beautiful. Beauty comes from Him. Working in the arts and faith movement, I have been just amazed how God is using beauty of all forms, visual beauty, musical beauty, dance, drama, around the world to bring people to Him. His beauty attracts them, and He uses it. St. Augustine said, my God and my glory, for this reason I say a hymn of praise to you and offer praise for Him who offered sacrifice for me, for the beautiful objects designed by artist souls and realized by skilled hands come from that beauty which is higher than souls, and after that beauty my soul sighs day and night. Have you considered God's beauty in nature, in art, in each other? He made us. We're His workmanship. Psalm 50, verse 2, from Mount Zion, the perfection of beauty, God shines in glorious radiance. And finally, Thomas Aquinas says, the highest beauty is the Godhead. Since beauty consists in comeliness, but God's beauty itself beautifies all things. The Creator of beauty has set up all the beauty of things. When you see beauty, when you become aware of beauty, it should take you back to our Creator God, the one who sits in beauty. He's the source of all beauty. He delights when we delight in beauty of His creation, of His creative acts of others. So what are the benefits of being content? What do we get out of it? Well, we get immediate enjoyment where we are and what we have, regardless of the circumstances. We get the freedom to recognize someone else's achievements and applaud them instead of being jealous. Aren't we all, whether we admit it or not, tend to be, well, look at that person. He didn't deserve to get what he got. And look, what's wrong with me, God? But when you are content, you don't have those feelings of resentment and jealous. It cultivates a thankful spirit. So how do I know if I'm living this way? Well, one of the first things is we don't live in the land of if only. I could be happy if only. Only if I had a dog like they have a dog. Then I'd be happy. I could be content. If I had a husband, which I do, of 60 years, folks, last year, almost 61. If I had a great-grandchild, we now have two since we've seen you. We're great-grandparents and love it. But I lived in the land of if only. Sometimes if you're suffering from not being content in a godly manner, you have a drivenness to achieve, a dissatisfaction with who you are or what you're doing. You have envy. Charles Swindoll says, a painful and resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, accompanied by a strong desire to possess that same advantage, is a key sign that you're not living in contentment. There's a lack of joy, not happiness. That's based on what the things, a lack of joy. In the Old Testament, we find that Israel's dissatisfaction with God provided their rationale for worshiping other gods. A lack of contentment can lead to idolatry. Is there anything in your life that you place ahead of God Himself? That's idolatry. Scriptures tell us that greed is a sign of idolatry. St. Augustine says, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until we find our rest in you. I was not necessarily, I've never been one driven by ambition. But I've got to tell you, when we had to leave Europe, come back to the States, I was anything but satisfied. In fact, even today, I would tell you I left my heart over there. I've got to go back every once in a while just to meet it again. That's been a hard one, I'll be honest with you. We came home in that same summer. Within a year, we had lost our best friend that we had recruited to the mission field. We lost my mother and my father. I had to find my contentment again. Sometimes we have feelings of spiritual stagnation. And discontentment is often the sign of it. Contentment is defined as happiness with our situation in life. But in reality, it is ease of mind. It's a feeling manifesting satisfaction with one's life, status, or situation. Feeling secure and comfortable with who you are and where you are. Philippians 4, 11 to 13, I'm going to start with verse 8. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true, what is honorable, and right. I quoted this verse so many times to my kids, they got so tired of it, but this was the standard when they were considering what they'd watch, what they would participate in, where they'd go. This is what we tried to raise up for them as the standard. Pure and lovely and admirable. Think on those things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all that you've learned and received, and that he has brought you into his presence, and you are holy and blameless as you stand before him without a single fault. I just skipped to Colossians there, but it seemed to fit. Didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. Everything you've heard from me and saw me doing, then the God of peace will be with you. Go down just a verse. I have learned how to be content with whatever I have. And then verse 13, the key, for I can do everything through Christ. I'll quickly go through this. What was Paul's secret? His secret was that he lived in the strength of God, whatever his circumstances. He learned to relax, that contentment is a process, and we can relax in whatever the circumstances might be. He continued to live in the trust of God when the good disappeared. God owns it all. Job tells us everything under heaven belongs to him. Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's and everything in the world and all who live in it. 1 Timothy 6:7, we brought nothing into this world and we can take nothing out. Matthew 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What is my goal? To be still, to stop striving, to be content. Every year before the new year, I ask God to give me a word to work on during that year. I've had various words. This last one is something that we're talking about today. 2025 was contentment for me. And I think I was doing pretty well until July. We were headed, had tickets to go to Salt Lake City to meet our second great-granddaughter. I was so excited, could not wait. That night I became so ill. I couldn't function, I couldn't move. This is gross, but I vomited all over myself in the room twice. Scared Glenn to death when he woke up. Came out saying, Diane, we're going to be late to get on the plane. And then looked at me and realized I wasn't going anywhere. I was put into the hospital immediately and was diagnosed with severe sepsis with unknown cause. They still don't know where it came from. Or why. The doctors told Glenn that I was within 2 hours of death because my blood pressure and my kept going down and my organs were shutting down. And in the midst of that, we had people praying for healing. But God gave me an insight before he raised me up, and I believe God healed me. I truly believe it was the healing of God. But he gave me an insight that God the healer always heals. He either heals here on earth or he heals in glory. But I was going to be healed one way or the other. And I began to rest in that. That was a Wednesday. Immediately, within 12 to 18 hours, the medicine they were pumping into me began to work. My white blood count began to come down, not quickly, but down. My blood pressure stopped going down. On Sunday, our pastor, I was watching it on my iPad, preached on when Peter in Acts raised Dorcas from the dead. And I said, God, that's what you did for me. That's exactly what you did, and I was praising him. But I had no idea what post-sepsis syndrome was. I could do nothing. I could not get up. I couldn't walk by myself. I couldn't do any of my work. In Charlotte, while I'm Europe director for ACT, I also have a ministry working with individual artists in Charlotte, and I'm kind of a spiritual director for them. I meet with them. We walk through their spiritual journey. I couldn't do it. And for months, I could do nothing. And you know what I found out about myself? That if I can't do, I don't know who I am. I was not content. I admit it to you. And I know, I'm confident that God made me a human being, not a human doing. But I realized how deeply connected I was with what I could do for God in order to feel accepted by God. I know that there's nothing I can do. I know it in my heart that God tells us there's nothing we can do to make him love us more or less. He made us, he saved us, he brought us to himself. We're his workmanship. We're loved completely, according to Romans 5. And when he talks about pleasing him, he talks about the fruit of the Spirit, which is an exercise of being, not doing. And yet, I had to come to the place to say, God, even if I can never do my ministry again, I will trust you. When Tim died, many of you know our story. We had our eldest son murdered 33 years ago now. God taught me something that when God is all that you have, you find that he's all that you need. I believe that. And yet, I, lying on my bed, was saying, God, I have no purpose. I don't have any worth. I don't have any. How can I go from believing that when my son was murdered to because I am, not because I got sick, but because I couldn't get over it for so many months. And the doctor said, you know, someone at your age, I love that, don't you love it? This may be the new normal. And I said, God, new normal, how can I just be? And then it hit me. That's all God's asked of me, is to be his child, to love him completely, to surrender to him whatever my circumstances. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but I have a feeling some of you are struggling with the same thing. Ask God to search your heart and reveal any attitude of discontentment. Confess if God reveals to you that there is something in your life you love more than you love him. That if that was taken away, you would stop loving and serving him. That's idolatry. Confess the areas of your life that you live in the land of if only. Redefine contentment from a feeling to a choice. A choice to live in God's strength and circumstances. And then commit all your needs and wants to God. And delight through his strength. Rejoice in whatever circumstances you find yourself. And may God receive the glory. Amen.
You've been listening to a podcast from Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. If you'd like to learn more about ancient future faith or worship with us at Epiclesis, visit us on the web at www.epiclesis.org. The Lord be with you.